Moin moin und herzlich willkommen zum Dolphins Drive, eurem Podcast über die Miami Dolphins, der Franchise, die ja einen Spieler ärmer sind, aber dafür eine jede Menge Capspace reicher. Und wenn es heißt Dolphins Drive, dann heißt es natürlich, ich mache das hier nicht alleine, sondern ich habe heute auch den Tobi Witter mit dabei. Moin Tobi.
Moin.
Und der Michu ist auch wieder mit dabei.
Hallo, hallo.
And now it's time to switch from German into English, because as we mentioned it the last 2 weeks, we have a guest from America, from the United States, from Miami. He is a beat writer for the Miami Dolphins. He's journalist, sports columnist for more than 30 years now for the Florida Sun Sentinel. He has won the National Headline Award 2016 for the Top Sports column. So, welcome, Dave Hyde.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to everybody in Germany and whoever else is listening.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. It's awesome to have someone from the United States, from close to the Miami Dolphins here in the podcast. So it's the first time we are having someone who's not from Germany, and it's quite awesome. So
a lot of pressure on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an honor to have you.
We appreciate that you're taking the time for such a project, and yeah, you can say some words about yourself. So what you're doing and what's your work related to.
Okay, so I've written a column for the Sun Sentinel for the last, I got the job in about 1990. It was at the Earthquake World Series, actually, long before many people probably listening were born. In 89, I was working for the Miami Herald then. I worked there for 5 years. And now, so my job's really I write four columns a week. I write blogs. I do a podcast and different things, but it's different than a beat writer. A beat writer goes to all the practices, goes to, writes news when it happens. And I sort of get to pick and choose. I'm lucky that way between all the teams in South Florida. So I write about the Miami Heat, Miami Hurricanes, the Panthers, and the Marlins when interest is there, but the Dolphins are the number one team and the number one interest, just like in most NFL markets in the United States. They really drive what people want to read, and so in the season and out of season, I write a lot about the Dolphins.
Yeah, I guess the Dolphins are an interesting team when we have a look in the last 2 years. So a lot of things happened, and one thing happened yesterday, and I guess it was really surprising that the Dolphins are on the way to part ways with Kyle Van Noy. So my understanding is that they are still searching for a trade partner. So if we have maybe two franchises who are interested in Kyle Van Noy, maybe there will be a trade. Otherwise, Kyle Van Noy will be cut by the Dolphins. So for me, it was really surprising. Yeah, the cap space is there, but it was surprising, a four-year contract and cut after 1 year. So what are your thoughts about the cut or about the news from yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it was surprising in that Kyle Van Noy, you know, he came in. Brian Flores knew him from New England. He delivered pretty much what you expected of him this year. There was no great surprise from his game from New England to here, or no drop off either. He played hurt. He played hard. He was the captain of the defense. So from that standpoint, it was a surprise. But when you look at what the Dolphins did contractually with him and what Kyle Van Noy and his agent agreed to, it was a one-year contract. It was announced 4 years, $51 million, I believe. but really at each offseason, the Dolphins had a ramp off to decide, do we want to keep him? So they had him 1 year for $15 million effectively. And now they have to decide again, okay, is he worth keeping around for roughly the same amount of money or not? And so I credit the Dolphins here. They gave themselves an option every year to make a decision with him. Last year they had so much money, free agent money to toss around. The deal 4 years, 51 was probably a little much. Byron Jones was a little much. But what's going to happen in a week, I'm told by a couple agents, and is there's going to be so many players on the street because the salary cap got decreased. And a lot of players are going to be caught in the squeeze and they're going to be on the street. So there's going to be Kyle Van Noy is surprising today. A week from now, in context of what's happening around the league, I think most people from a business standpoint will say, I get what the Dolphins did because you can pick up Kyle Van Noy for 50 cents on the dollar. There is another issue here, and it's how you treat people and how I wrote a column about this on sunsentinel.com and talking about, you know, surprising but not surprising, but one part of it that they got to be careful of. So they got rid of a coach, an offensive line coach, after four practices. After the first season, they got rid of two coordinators. After the second season, Chan Gailey, the next offensive coordinator, left. Now they've gotten rid of Kyle Van Noy. You know, people are going to be I don't want to say they're going to be hesitant to come here because I don't believe that, but they're going to be coming in with eyes wide open and making sure that all their, Brian Flores talks about family and treating players like kids during the season. In the off season, it's a whole nother matter. There is no family evidently. So they got to be, careful about dealing with people in that regard.
Yeah, that's something we have talked about also here in the podcast, especially the offensive coordinator position. So we have, after 1 year that O'Shea was gone, and then now we Chan Gailey is gone, and now we have a two-man solution, so hopefully not both will be gone after the season, but this is also an interesting thing. We have now two men in the position who are co-offensive coordinator. And so the news was out and afterwards it was just quiet. We had the news out there for 1 week or so, but no one in the news gave a hint how this will work. So maybe you have more information, or maybe you can give us an impression of how this two co-offensive coordinator system can work for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, so it is interesting, and it's highly unusual, okay? The only other coordinator's job that is split is the Minnesota Vikings defensive coordinator, okay? So and as you said, it has broken out that this is going to happen, but the Dolphins haven't announced it. They haven't talked about it. They haven't laid out exactly how it's going to work. So there's some mystery involved on a day-to-day or game-to-game level how it is going to work. The George Godsey has been called plays in Houston. Eric Studsville, from what is being whispered and rumored, is going to be the one calling plays here. We'll see. I'm not. Don't hold me to that, but that's sort of what's being discussed. So we'll see exactly how it works. Like with Kyle Van Noy, the Dolphins didn't announce that either. That came through Kyle Van Noy. They're playing things very tight to their vest for some reason, and letting everybody come to their own conclusions or theories and without really talking about anything. So that's one way to do it. It isn't how I would do business, but on another level, have to take questions or answer thing, and there's plenty of time to lay it out. So, I will say this for Brian Flores, he makes bold decisions. And if he thinks something's wrong, he corrects it. The two coordinators, they were his buddy. I assumed we brought O'Shave with him from New England the first year, and the defensive coordinator and him were assistants together at New England, and he had moved on, and they were both gone after the first year. And then Shane Gailey brings out a retirement, talks about how, how respected he liked him as competing against him, basically. And for whatever reason, he's gone after this year. You can't keep changing coordinators every year. Now it worked last year. I thought, boy, here they go changing systems and all that. But Tua below is your quarterback. You want him to get comfortable in the system he's in. And so hopefully they keep the same system. They keep the same verbiage, the words, the things he has to call in the huddle, because all that takes time to learn and get comfortable with. And he's probably comfortable now after 1 year. And the idea is, you hope you don't change everything. You make it, obviously you mold it to him. And if he's the quarterback, you get plays that work best for him. But the way to win the NFL, I've always thought, is you have a head coach who sets the culture and hires good coordinators. You get those coordinators with good systems, and you get the right players systems and develop them in that system. Now the Dolphins, they're on their third offensive coordinator in 3 years. So, and yet it didn't matter. They scored more points last year than they have, I believe, since 84, maybe 86, but we're talking decades. So, but I'm curious to exactly see on a day-to-day and game-to-game basis, to answer your question, how this works with two coordinators.
Yeah. Okay, great. Michael, so maybe you have a question.
Yes. You said that Brian Flores is a decision maker. So that's a good thing. But if you have to correct your decision, if you have to make another decision, it means that you made before a wrong decision. So how many wrong decisions can Brian Flores make before we have to question his work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, I was ready to question when I was scratching my head a year ago when they got rid of both their coordinators. Because the first thing when you go into a job interview, the first thing a guy says is, okay, what's your staff? The owner or the general manager, whoever, to a coach, they say, okay, what will your staff look like? And they're all prepared. They have their staff, and it's well thought out. So a year in, they've already fired the offensive coordinator after four practices. They've fired or left or somewhere in between both coordinators. And I'm scratching my head thinking, can this work? And yet they improved to the sixth-ranked defense last year. They scored more points than they had in a while. So, but I agree with you. Can't keep changing, important coaches all around. And the important coaches are the coordinators, the offensive line coach who, has to integrate with the offensive coordinator and the defensive line coach, because usually the defensive coordinator, and in the Dolphins' case, it's the same. The defensive coordinator coaches the back half, the linebackers, the secondary, gets them coordinated. That's typically how it works. And the defensive line coaches, he's a lion tamer, dealing with these big, angry guys and getting them to function and work together. So, I'm fascinated. Brian Flores is a really fascinating coach, and I'm curious to see where it goes in that he does the one thing every coach, I believe, has to do. He sets the culture. You know, with Adam Gase, with some of the failed guys in the past, they were didn't really set a culture. And Gase said, oh, we're bringing in all these veterans to set the culture. No, no. The best coaches, the Don Shula's, the Pat Riley's with the Heat, Jimmy Johnson, they had the personality to set the culture. And Brian Flores fits. I'm not saying he's obviously at that level, but that idea, he knows the culture he wants, and he does that. Now, and he's, if something falls out of line, he's quick to make a decision. You know, Don Shula didn't fire a coach. He coached 33 years until his last few years as a head coach. So roughly 30 years without firing a coach. Look how many coaches have been fired from the Dolphins just in the last two wow. years. I get it's a different era. I understand that. But there's, you know, to answer your question, there, at some point, you got to start making the right decision with, and I get in today's world, the staffs are bigger. It's a, you know, the loyalty and all that is different. But you want to settle in with the base of talent and coaches and top players as much as you can in this era to get your system up and running.
Did this answer your question, Michel?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Great. So one thing before Toby can ask something. You said that Tua is our quarterback. The question is he? So from the technical standpoint, at the moment he is, but we have the Deshaun Watson, we have the Russell Wilson rumors out there. We had already, I saw it just 2 minutes before we started, that two of the journalists from Miami said that the Dolphins are close to be all in on Watson. So what are your thoughts? What do you think will the Dolphins do on the quarterback position?
Yeah, I would hope they are doing their due diligence and seeing what Deshaun Watson costs, seeing what Russell Wilson costs, because, you know, they're in the top six, seven quarterbacks in the league. The hope is Tua would get there, but if you can shortcut that and take – doubt out of the equation. I understand it cost, you know, Deshaun Watson is 25 years old. You can have him for the next 15 years, have a top quarterback. Russell Wilson's 32. So, you know, in today's world, let's say says he wants to play to over 40, let's say 6 to 8 years as a top quarterback. The cost would be different, but look, I'm all for if you can upgrade immediately, you would be a contender. You'd still have draft picks to – you'd have to trust that you can build around them enough and be a different building, but you should be able to do it. So that's over here in Pile A this offseason. We don't know what Houston's plans are. Are they going to trade him? Deshaun Watson says he's not going back. And he has a no trade clause. And there's been, you know, reports from his camp. His camp's the only one talking really right now. His agent, somebody in his camp is telling ESPN and all that, you know, the Dolphins were one of the teams he said he would be interested in. So, and Wilson, his agent gave four teams. The Dolphins weren't on the list. If I'm the Dolphins, I'm calling his agent trying to get on the list. I want all my options available. I want to know if he goes for three first-round draft picks, I'm in. If Deshaun Watson goes for four first-round picks, I'm in. And I get, you know, people say that isn't the plan. That wasn't the
– woo.
You know, but to me, the plan was in all this to get an elite quarterback. Okay? However you do it.
Yes.
You know, now – that's on Pile A because, again, we don't know what those teams are doing. At the same time, you know, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You can monitor those situations, and build for Tua, because right now he's your quarterback. Okay, he's the guy, and you got to figure out what will work best for him, what players, what, you know, plays, what players, how to make him comfortable, how to get him to improve. And so, you know, I'm planning accordingly that he's the quarterback, you know, how we're going to draft, how we're going to build and all that. While at the same time, I'm looking out there too, to see what happens with Watson and Wilson. And, you know, that's the off season right now. A general manager once told me, you know, 50% of his job is to get a top quarterback. And then once you have them, 50% of your job is figuring out how to keep them. Okay. Cause there's only five or six or in the league yeah. at a time. Okay. And the other 25 general managers, if they don't have it, they're waking up at 3 a.m. trying to figure out how to get that guy. And if you have them, you're trying to figure out how to keep them. So if Deshaun Watson or Wilson come up for sale, you know, I get why Dolphin fans, there's a lot of them who don't like that, but you know, I'd be all in on it.
Yeah, I think it's a high emotional topic, so yeah. That's also in the German parts. So it's like, yeah, I'm fine with Tua and to develop him, to build around him, but I would be also thrilled to have Deshaun Watson in the building. So these are the two main points. But maybe, Michael, you want to say something about this topic?
Yes, of course. The quarterback is the most, without a doubt, it's the most important position in the modern NFL. It's a offense-driven league. But if you watch who have success, so it's always so that a franchise quarterback without a supporting cast, without an properly offensive line, even rare reaches the playoffs. But if you have a mediocre quarterback and a top offensive line, a good supporting cast, you at least reach the playoffs. So it's, if you pay so much for Watson, in my opinion, we have so many holes left, so we can't have a properly supporting cast, and so in my opinion, we really have
we have the issue to build around Watson. So this sure, so sure. this is this
we is can't the, we can't fix our holes argument. All our holes. So if you pay so much, what do you say about that?
Yeah, that's a valid question. Do you have? Can you build around him? Let's say it costs four number one draft picks, or the equivalent. Okay, of four number ones. And so you have two of the number three pick. Then that's where the negotiations start. Is the number three pick really two number one picks? Okay, because you could trade that pick out for a seventh or eighth pick to Carolina and a number one next year. And here's how I would answer that question. If they play their cards right in a trade, they will still have a normal draft this year. They'll have an elite quarterback, and we're talking, you know, we're talking one side here, the Deshaun Watson or Wilson side here. If they trade for him, one of them, they would still, let's say, have the 18th pick. They have a second round pick. That's a normal draft. Okay, if I'm the GM, I say, okay, I got my elite quarterback. We got a good defense. We're going to fill in some holes because there's going to be a lot of people on the market this year. We're going to fill in some holes in free agency cheap with decent players, you know, average players. But with our draft picks, we got to hit on that. We got to hit with the 18th pick. We got to hit with the second round pick. We got to get good players. Okay. But, you know, they're going to have to get good players regardless, okay? And they're going to have to get more of them, okay, if they don't have a quarterback. And so, look, if you can get that elite quarterback, that to me, changes the dimension of the team and what you can do immediately. And so I understand what people are saying, that they won't have enough resources to build around. If I'm the GM and I have that guy, I have to trust myself that I can find enough talent to build around. And you're right that I'm just going to say, you're right, with a mediocre quarterback and good talent around him, you can make the playoffs. But you're not going to have sustained great winning. Look at and everybody points to some outlier, a Trent Dilfer winning the Super Bowl. You can do it. You would draw up, but done. It's a lot easier to do with Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or one of those, Aaron Rodgers, one of the elite quarterbacks and with a little lesser talent around them. So, would be getting the elite quarterback.
Yeah. So if I got you right, you expect if there's a trade happening, you expect it to happen on draft day. Maybe to get the first from Carolina to trade back, and then you expect a trade, including Deshaun Watson, happening at draft day.
No, I'm just scenario. There's a million ways it could happen. Have to happen in the days leading up to the draft. When there'd be some sort of deadline for teams, if you're going to trade Deshaun Watson, then that's when you're going to get the most for him, and you want to be able to use those draft picks this year and not say in June make the trade and have to wait a whole nother year before you can actually use some of those draft picks. So. Most practical standpoint is right before the draft. But again, I don't know. Nobody knows what Houston is thinking. No one. He reportedly, Deshaun Watson met with the head coach, David Culley, and it didn't. He left the meeting, and he still said he wanted a trade. So, the question is how dug in is Deshaun Watson, and how. Because if I'm Houston, something's gone terribly wrong inside Houston's franchise, and it probably hasn't come out. Okay, Andre Johnson, I covered Andre Johnson at my University of Miami. I talked to him through the years. He's a very quiet and reserved and rational guy, and for him to come out loudly against, there's something going on in there, some dynamic. We don't know about, and maybe we never will. But if I'm Houston, I try to fix that, and I try to make peace with Deshaun Watson. Because for all the reasons every other team is calling Houston or Seattle right now are the reasons that you want to keep them. They're very hard to find, and your franchise will rise or fall with the quarterback.
Yeah. Michael just mentioned the holes or the needs Miami has to fill in this upcoming offseason or in this upcoming free agency signings. Where do you see the Miami Dolphins taking money, getting players being signed? On what positions do you think are the impressive needs? This franchise.
Yeah, playmakers. Let's start there. We're going to move off the Deshaun Watson and Wilson, and we're going to move to him. Okay. He needs help. He needs a number one receiver. He can trust how he's going to run routes. And Gesicki is a good tight end. A receiving tight end. He needs a running back to take pressure. He needs – so right there, there's you need – to me, the whole wide receiver room has to be rebuilt, okay? everybody's getting hurt here. Okay. So if you they brought in five new receivers with okay, that's fine. If they get to draft a couple, couple free agency, and again, I'm curious to see what's going to happen in a week. Because I keep being told there's going to be a lot of good players out there on the street who, because of the salary crunch, you know, they're going to be available for less money than you would have thought. So we'll see. But I need a receiving room I can trust. I can trust the guys are going to play. I can trust they're going to run. They fit into the system we want. I mean, I like DeVante Parker, but DeVante Parker's Sandlot player, he run down there, throw it up, he'll go get it. But running crisp routes and fitting into, you know, timing and all that is a more difficult proposition. So that gets to, again, to me, what type of offense are we going to run? And we don't, you know, I don't have any word on that, but, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who to me was a shock how good he was, but, you know, him and Ryan DeVante Parker had this connection where Ryan would throw it up there in a position where DeVante could get it. And basically it was sandlot football. It was just backyard football. And it worked. I mean, I'm not taking any away. That was Tua, as you saw, he had a harder time having the faith to do that. He's for a lot of reasons that he's a rookie. He hasn't played with Parker before. He's trying to learn a lot of things, and he's used to at Alabama, you know, guys having some separation and not really just throwing it up and saying, go get it. And so is that how they want it? I don't know, but but too many guys have gotten hurt. Too many guys to think that, you know, all of a sudden everybody's going to be healthy next year. And so, you know, receivers are the number one thing. Running back, you need that. To me, I would bring the same offensive line back because you talk about draft developing players and all that. You had three rookies starting. They better be better next year. I mean, your whole plan is these draft picks. The whole plan is these draft picks that you've invested in get better. And so you got to let that play out. You saw Andrew Van Ginkle got better. You saw Gesicki's gotten better. So you're seeing, you know, Christian Wilkins was better. I'm not saying they're superstars, but they're getting better. And the idea is, you know, that'd be my thought with the offensive line. Rather than, I'm not saying you don't in the somewhere in the draft, third, fourth, fifth round, you take an offensive lineman. But I'm just saying with one of the top picks, I'm not taking an offensive lineman. I'm taking an offensive playmaker. Or if the draft serves you up a pass rusher you like or a middle linebacker that can do a lot of things, I'm taking one of them. But my big emphasis is on playmakers this draft and or free agency, depending on how you match them up.
All right. To squeeze you a little bit, do you have names if you're going to play GM in this upcoming free agency signings? Who are the players you wanted to be signed?
Boy, that is a tough one because I want a veteran receiver. Okay. So is Will Fuller, what's his price tag?
I got it.
Houston. Okay. And again, you're talking, he has had some injuries. So, I'd have to be on board with that. I'd have to be accepting of that. But somebody like that is he has some speed, which is what you look at the dynamics of what your receiving core needs. He would bring some of that. And if you're going to draft one or two rookies, especially high priced rookie, the third pick, if you use it or trade down a little and you take a receiver with it, then maybe with one of the picks in the second round, you take a receiver. You're going to need some veteran mentor to help them.
Yes.
You know, you look at the Dolphin history. Paul Warfield came in. We're going way back here, 1970. Okay. Best receiver in the league, Hall of Famer. Nat Moore was drafted in 74, I believe. Paul Warfield taught Nat Moore how to run patterns, how to, you know, be, how to carry himself as a professional receiver, what to see of defenses. Okay. Nat Moore then taught Mark Clayton and Mark Duper how to run patterns, how to do things. OJ McDuffie came in and learned from them. Okay. So you see, yeah, that's lost. Okay. There's nobody teaching anybody in the last 15 years because guys either haven't been good enough or haven't stuck around long enough. I guess what I'm trying to show is the idea of a mentor in addition to a really good receiver is important in, you know, the receiving room and other rooms too. I somehow got to find a veteran quarterback to help if he's a quarterback, not, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick was perfect except for one thing. He was better than Tua and the players. Fitzpatrick. Remember, the players voted on the leadership award, and who won that award? Ryan Fitzpatrick. So Dolphins, if they're going to Tua, they can't have Fitzpatrick back because he was too good of a mentor and too good of a player. and very weird to say that, but they do need, you know, somebody like him. Just he can be a sounding board, how to play, you know, how to play quarterback, how to read defenses beyond the coaches. And so that would be on my free agent shopping list. There's not a whole lot of those guys out there now. Andy Dalton, maybe. You know, what do you think of the Washington quarterback who just got released?
Alex Smith.
Yeah, right, Alex Smith. I don't know. I'm just throwing his name. I don't know who the guy is, but I would hope for somebody to help Tua again, because if we don't go to the fantasy pile almost, the Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, yeah, it's all about Tua, all about, you know, helping him and making his I would think a veteran quarterback would help him out. So that'd be on my shopping list for free agency. You know, and again, it's hard for me to answer some of this because I think there's going to be so many names that come out next week that what middle linebackers are going to come out that can fit into this system. And it's a demanding system. He doesn't look. They traded Raekwon McMillan. He's a run stopping. He couldn't cover. Okay. And they need a guy who can do both. And so who's going to fit that? I don't know who's out there that you know, pass rushers, they need a young pass rusher to develop. Okay. They're really doing it by committee last year. And Ogba was a nice surprise, a nice upgrade. Have that one guy when they come into games, every team has to game plan against. And they really don't have that guy in the front seven per se right now. You know, it's the secondary is where they've invested. And that's, you know, that's fine. That's a model to do it. The Patriots, where Flores came from, you look what their big investments are. They're in the secondary with safeties and cornerbacks and that's the model the Dolphins have. Other teams go the other way. The Eagles, the 49ers went to the Super Bowl by having dominant defensive lines and investing in the defensive line. So, again, it depends on your model and how you go about it. Long-winded answer about your free agency. I think there's going to be some buys on the street in a week. Then you really be able to put your shopping list together of how to get playmakers, how to fill in some of the other holes, meaning linebacker, pass rusher, with the draft. And you'll have to marry the two and figure out your off-season plan.
Perfect answer to answer at least four or five questions we got from the community.
Great. But two things I have, two different positions. So one position you mentioned already, the running back position. So in Germany, we have Twitter analytics bubble, I would say. And the thing is, we see that the running back position is not as valuable as the wide receiver position or other positions. So if you have the money, wouldn't you spend it more on wide receivers like draft picks and not draft, for example, what would I see in the Twitter game in the US, that a lot of people are totally high on Najee Harris. So I would see that it's, for me, I don't like it to pick a running back in the first round because I see the Ezekiel Elliott's, Saquon Barkley. So they never had the impact, or they had a little bit of impact, but they already also had very good O-lines. So what's your take on the running back position and how you value the running back position?
Yeah, I agree with you that I don't want to say they're interchangeable, with the exception of if you can have that game changer, that you're sure that it's Kamara Harris or there's a couple that but they're few and far between, and you look at what teams do with running backs. It's almost they're disposable. So I wouldn't take one in the first round either. Nick Chubb is as good as any running back out there. He's a second round pick. Now he probably would go higher because now you know that he's what he can do and all that. But the point is you can find that talent in the second round or blow. The question the Dolphins have this offseason is Aaron Jones of Green Bay, because he is that. You know, I'd put him in that top list of four or five running backs that can change the way an offense looks. And I don't – I'm curious to see – so if Green Bay franchises him, it would be $11 million a year. And that's Green Bay's question. What do they do with Aaron Jones? So I think some teams are waiting to see that. Now, he would go more than that in free agency, and it's hard for me to pay a running back that much. I mean, if you could get him for $8 million a year, or $9 million or something like that, but you're talking $13 million for a, I agree.
That's insane.
Yeah, you look at Kansas City, how they're built. They, you know, a year ago they won with Damian Williams at running back. This year, they kept trying. They brought in Le'Veon Bell, and he didn't even get off the sideline. but they had, they used a 32nd pick in the draft on a rookie running back who did very well. But I'm with you. I think you can find running backs. And again, it comes down to you have to trust that you can find a running back. I wouldn't use a high draft pick on a running back either.
Great. And the other hole, you said that you would go with the established O-line from last year, but there's one piece missing. So we are losing Ted Karras to the free agency. So would you bring him back, or what would be your take? Maybe Lindsley from the Green Bay Packers is on the market, so this could be a fit, or maybe also in the mock drafts. I mean, mock drafts before free agency are just fun, but no fundamentals. Creed Humphrey is out there in the draft. So this is also a player who's linked a lot of times to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I now, full disclosure, I haven't broken down the tape on all those centers in the league. Okay. So I'm not myself up as a center expert here. You could bring back Ted Pearson, I'd be fine with that. I mean, I don't think he's going to get a huge money offer that would sway him. He was a guy who very good with the young guys on the offensive line. And he was an average player. I can win with average players. He wasn't great, but he was average. And if you have 15 average players and 7 great players on a team, you can win with that team. Okay. So, and again, it comes down to your options this offseason. And I would look, where's Michael Dieter? He played some center. He practiced at center. Where's he in his development? He played one game at guard this past year, and he was a lot better than he was as a rookie. Is that who he is? One game, it's really hard to say, but they see him every day in practice. And where would he be as a center? I don't know. But, you know, I'm not investing huge money, and I'd be happy with Ted Karras coming back. Same price, same idea, and lining up that way.
Great. So, Michel Tobi, do you have any more questions? So, I have more questions, but I don't want to cut you off. So,
yeah,
feel free to ask.
Yeah, about a few hours ago, it was a fake account, but you mentioned the wide receiver room. What do we do with Jakeem Grant? He's in Miami for about a few years. He showed his skills. He showed what he's able to do, but he also showed what he is not able to do. What do we do with him in the future? Cut him.
Yeah.
Or maybe trade him.
Yeah, probably not trade. But I love Jakeem Grant as a return man. Like him as a mix up in the receiving core, but not. I think he showed you A, has some questions as an every down receiver, and B, his durability is an issue again. And so you got to figure out how to limit his how you're going to use him. And as a return man, he's great. Now the question becomes, I think he's owed $4.8 million this year. Are they happy with that? You could probably. Yeah, you could trim that if you want. I want him on my team, but I want him on my team for maybe a little more effective price. But, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for Jakeem Grant. I like how he plays. I like what his career's done. But, you know, the question becomes with the Dolphins and when we're centered on the receiving, if you're going to be a playoff team, these players have to be available in January, okay? And all of them are getting hurt, you know? And can you trust that they're going to be there in January? And that's how you sort of have to make up your room. And I want to have, you know, players that I can trust are going to be around. Jakeem's gotten hurt. I can't remember how many games. I have to look up. He played last year, but the other question is Bowden has shown that he has background as a receiver and returner, and Malcolm Perry too might be a return man. So, I don't know where Jakeem Graham fits completely on this team.
Okay. That's an interesting point. Michel?
So what do you mean? What is the most important position we have to improve? In the draft or in the free agency?
Receiver. You got to help out.
Okay.
You got to help out with Tua. Yeah, regardless of who the quarterback is, they need more receivers. They need better receivers. Running crisp routes, getting yards after catch, being downfield threats, a lot of things that they don't. And I would throw a running back into that idea, a running back who can be a receiver and fit into the passing game. And, you know, that's the thing about Aaron Jones. That's why he's interesting. Or it's why Harris out of Alabama is interesting. In that they're good runners. You look at their yards per carry, very effective. And yet they're also receivers. You can do a lot of things with them. To me, Aaron Jones is a good weapon. He's a weapon to have. And I get why he would be tempting. It just wouldn't fit into my model of, you know, if it was last year where the Dolphins had more money or than anybody else to spend in free agency, then I could say, yeah, let's splurge on a, you know, with the properly structured contract with an Aaron Jones. But they don't have that kind of money this year.
So just a moment. So Rico said that he wishes in the next draft, he wishes with the first three picks, he want to draft two receivers. Is it a plan you will?
Yeah, I can see following that. I mean, we're all talking in theory, right? Because we don't know the draft board and how it's going to fall. But yeah, I'm with that. If I need two young receivers, and my first pick, I want to be a receiver if everything works out, and in the second round, absolutely, I could see them taking two receivers. I could see them taking receivers with the top two picks. If it would work out for them. I think it's that much of a need on this team and that much of a need to help Tua out that, you know, if we're talking receivers, you know, one of them might, you know, the Florida tight end, Kyle Pitts. So when we're talking receiver, we're talking helping the passing game somehow, okay? And you know, I'm sure Kyle Pitts is a fascinating player. He's a little like, I get in that he's a little better blocker, but neither of them are going to be, you know, your their strength isn't blocking, it's receiving. And so can you have two of those guys on your team, or do you just get – you know, pure receivers. I don't know, but I would see in the first and second round the Dolphins taking receivers. I first two picks, I wouldn't have a problem taking receivers.
I say in reality, I have the wish with the first pick to pick somebody by now.
Penei Sewell, so the left tackle from Oregon. This is also when. I mean, you said you would go with our O-line at the moment, so Sewell is not a plan. But I see a possibility to draft Sewell at number 3 if he's available.
Please no. Please don't do that.
Okay, that's a statement. Here we go.
Okay,
but Toby.
You mentioned that you like the play type of Jakeem Grant. Who is the player of the Miami Dolphins you like most at the moment, or you like most all time?
Whew, tough questions.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear Dan.
You know,
that's an obvious one.
When you ask that, okay, we'll talk off the last couple years, okay, and I came around, I surprised myself because I was shocked by watching Ryan Fitzpatrick play. I thought he's a journeyman quarterback, and I get he didn't fit into this rebuild, okay. He was just a bridge to tomorrow. But when you were around him, when you heard him talk, when you saw how players followed him, and you saw we all know people that everybody looks at and admires, and how he carries himself, how they talk, how they do business, and then the NFL, obviously how they play. I was fascinated by watching Ryan Fitzpatrick the last 2 years. And if you had told me when they signed him, there's no way. He's just a journeyman quarterback. Look how many. I think some team has the chance to get lucky for a year. You know, he's 38 now. For a year, if they sign Patrick, I'll be fascinated to see what happens with him. So not the answer I would have thought I would have given, but that when you say who – he was fun to watch. He was shockingly fun to watch to me. All time. Well, I mean, I covered Marino for most of his career. And what you realize when you have a guy like that is any Sunday can be fun. Okay, he can go out and light it up any Sunday and bring entertainment factor that nobody else can. And so from that standpoint, you know, fascinating guys to cover. Marino wasn't fascinating to cover. I mean, he buttoned down. He didn't really like to deal with the press. I got along with him fine. Very well. We got along better after his career when he didn't, you know, he's relaxed.
Okay.
Ricky Williams was just fascinating to cover. He was you never know what would come up with him. I remember once, sort of a May. So we're off season practice and I was talking to him. I go, what are you going to do this summer? And he goes, oh, I'm studying massage therapy. And I said, really? So we started talking about that. And he said, yeah. I said, well, that'd be an interesting column to do. And he goes, yeah, call me up sometime. So I, you know, sometime that summer I called him up. And he goes, well, come on over. And I went over to this school he was studying at. And when I say school, it was like in a shopping mall, you know, in a couple rooms, a couple things. And I went in there and he goes, well, what do you want to do? You know, where do you want to talk? And I go, yeah. I said, what about giving me a massage? He said, okay. So fortunately, Japanese shiatsu massage where I kept all clothes on. But Ricky Williams, so with Ricky, he was a fascinating guy in or out of football. And I'm sure to this day, last time I talked to him, he was a couple years ago. He's now working, I don't know, I'm sure you guys have heard, for a marijuana company with the legal distribution and, you know, he has some role in that. And he said, yep, I'm getting all that money that the league took away with fines for him smoking marijuana. I'm earning it back now by working for the marijuana company. So, he was an interesting guy. So,
Us in Germany, as you mentioned, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the last few years we had the situation that he's reduced to his gunslinger style and to his
I don't even give a fuck.
I don't even give a fuck mentality with the shirts and the hair and his beard. So us as Doll fans in Germany, it was pretty hard to defend the signing of Ryan Fitzpatrick, but we also had fun watching him and watching his interviews.
After when they were 1-3, I was like, let's just go to Tua, get Tua out there. You know, you're not going to go anywhere this season. And the plan is not Fitzpatrick, it's Tua. And I still think that's the right thing to do. But I was fascinated by watching Ryan Fitzpatrick play.
Great. Crazy. Yeah. The fun thing about Ricky Williams is also we also have a small group who are buying memorabilia, which are also signed by Ricky Williams. And it's funny, some of the helmets he signs, it just says his signature and then smoke weed every day.
Yeah,
it's just like great.
Yeah, I can't top that smoke weed. You know.
Yeah, I mean the massage thing was maybe a little bit more.
Too much information.
Yeah. I take any information I can get, so no problem with that. Michael Tobi, do you have any other questions? So I would have just one question I would take, and maybe you have other questions. I don't know. Okay, so I mean, it's fun. We're talking about an hour. We don't have mentioned COVID now. That's awesome. But the Miami Dolphins have a lot of draft picks, and we have a season where a lot of students has played less time than normal. We don't have an NFL combine, so you don't have the measurements. Okay, that's one part, but you also don't have the in-person interviews. And you don't have so much sample size. Some of the highest talent players choose to opt out. So how high will be the impact for the Dolphins compared to a normal season, or is the impact not so high? So what's your guess on this topic?
Yeah, I don't think the impact will be high. I think you would have liked to see some of these guys who opted out more, you know, another year. But, you know, they showed enough. It's interesting. Where the Dolphins trending, their metric, they're taking younger players. They took Austin Jackson at 20. They took Noah Igbenogany. I haven't said the name in a while, so I'm going to screw it up.
Igbenogany.
Igbenogany, thank you. He was, I think. Yeah, right. But he's, you know, a year. They're trending in the last couple of years to taking younger players. So that's a metric they pick. Obviously, Chase out of LSU, he played a sophomore year. He was given the award as the best receiver in college as a sophomore. So I don't think that would prevent these guys sitting out or their age would prevent the Dolphins from taking them. And nor do I think the measurements really matter from the standpoint, even at the combine, the teams already had all the measurements. Those measurements were for us to get them, but the teams, the scouts, that's just confirmation of what they had. Okay. The workouts, the speeds, the hand measurement, they had all that information already. So, you know, it okay. Confirmed what were given in many cases. But, you know, they're so far down the line on that. Really what's missing at the combine is the interviews with players. They talk to a player, see how mature he is, see how much he wants to work, see where his mind is really. And you can, they can do that. And it's all set up through the league and the players to do that on Zoom and all that. So I haven't heard any anecdotal, you know, it's working or it's not working, but there's no reason really why it wouldn't.
Okay.
It's different. But I think everybody in the past year around the world has accepted things are a little different.
Thanks. So Michael Tobi.
Yes, I have one really personal question, if I may. So, you said it's a long time you cover the Miami Dolphins in American football. And it's also for me a long time I watch American football. I follow it from Germany, barely so intensive like you. There were no possibilities. But I'm the elder statesman between these two young guns here. I have noticed that the game has changed. 10, 15 years ago, you said defense wins championships, defense is many important. But if I now see games, I see It's about the quarterback. It's about high scoring and nothing else. I miss a little bit the old times. A good defense, a hard defense, running backs like Zary Zonka. What about you? What do you think about the change?
Yeah, and they've purposely done that. I think to you look at the rules committee, 1978. Don Shula was on the rules committee, and they really put in rules to help the offense scoring because it was going down. Scoring was going down, and you saw that the first person to take huge advantage of it was Dan Marino. In 78, they didn't have Dan Marino and the Dolphins, so it wasn't like Don Shula was trying to help himself out. But and that started the NFL realized points are popularity. Points mean a more popular game, and offense sells more than defense sells. So to keep the game as popular as they could, they had to keep loosening up the rules for the offense. And so there's a background to it. I don't miss the defense. I don't miss the 10-7 games. I don't miss the grinding. I think the quarterback, is he more important than before? You know, maybe, because you couldn't have a Super Bowl where Bob Greasy hands the ball off seven times or throws seven times, like the Dolphins had in 73. You're going to have more wide open games, but still, a couple years ago, the outlier game was the Patriots beating the Rams in a low scoring game. But I went into every playoff game the last few years thinking to win, you had to score at least 30 points, and it typically held up. I mean, there were exceptions when Mahomes got hurt. The Chiefs won. I think they scored 25 points. There was a lower. I think Green Bay won lower with the lower. But you know, that's my thought. And I get where you're saying the game's changed a lot. I think it's more exciting. I think it's. But I get where you're saying. I understand where people. That line, defense wins championships, isn't the line anymore. Offense wins championships.
Yeah. Thanks for your opinion.
Toby, one last question. So, or do you not have any questions left?
Nope. I think I'm done for today.
for today. So great. anything else, Dave? Do you want to cover or you want to mention or
ask anything?
Let's see. I think we've about hit on all the big topics. I'm always fascinated by groups like yours in Germany that are Dolphin fans, you know. And I remember writing when the Dolphins first went to England. What year was that? 2007 to play. And I'm writing. Because a lot of Dolphin fans locally were upset because they took the New York Giants game and they took it to England. And that meant that the Giants only play here what, once every 6 years or something like that. And there's a lot of New York fans. A lot of New York fans were upset in South.
Yep.
So I said, why are they taking that? Oh, my God, I got inundated with all these fans from Europe upset at me for questioning why the Dolphins game was going to England. It opened my eyes up that, there's a broader world out there for NFL football and for, you know, the Dolphins and in part because of their background in the 80s being televised there in the UK, at least, and I assume across Europe. Now you guys, I assume you can get whatever you want. And so I would imagine, at least I know how it is in other parts of the world, the Patriots are sort of the hot team right now just because they've had such success for the last number of years. But I'm fascinated. I appreciate your guys' passion to be that it's got to be. I always thought that the people I met at Dolphin games in England they're from Denmark and Germany and France, and those were the most passionate Dolphin fans I've met, because they had to be, because you're kind of in an island over there, and to be that passionate means you're a little crazy, right? I mean, so you know, my hat's off to you.
Completely. Thank you. That's right. It was my first NFL game was in London, and it was a Baltimore Dolphins game where we lost, I don't know, 2-0, and that was tough. But I was, 2019. I was first time in Miami. I watched the Eagles game, so the Mountaineer shot was great. So, but maybe we will have a London game in 2021. That's
I'm curious to see.
That would be great.
Obviously, we're supposed to go there last year. Yeah, and I don't know how that's going to get rescheduled. I'm curious.
We already have had conversation with the English Dolphins, with the French Dolphins to arrange some meeting, and unfortunately, we all had to cancel the whole stuff. But we have a strong community in Europe, so I remember you talking to Wayne, the leader of the UK Dolphins. He's a friend of us, and so if the Dolphins come to London again, we'll be there and we'll be fine.
Okay, get a hold of me. We'll go out and we'll. I'll see where you guys are meeting together. I assume it'll be in a bar or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
I hope there will be soon also an international game in Germany, like the American Bowl in 1992. That's where my love to the Dolphins began. Marino versus Elway.
Marino versus Elway. It was great. There's a funny story about that. The Dolphins were getting out of the bus, and team officials threw out Dolphin hats and scarves and everything. And, you know, fans were catching them, putting them on, and they're looking at some team officials who didn't know what happened. Like, hey, look at all the Dolphin fans out here. You know, look at them all, you know, because they're all of a sudden everybody. I know they like. I know all the players like going over to those games. They thought it was. Everybody likes something new and different.
Great. So I think then we've finished all the questions. Thank you very, very much again, Dave, to take the time to do this with us. And you find all the links to Dave's columns, to his Twitter channel in the show notes, as every guest. And some last words you want to say?
Vielen Dank. Thanks for everything.
Ah.
You're welcome.
And we didn't force you to say that.
Yeah.
to make sure.
I took German in school, but I wonder. I took many years of German in school, and I haven't used it in years and years and years because I live in Miami, where everybody speaks Spanish. So
it's like my English.
There you go, right.
To get you into the background, the German media, who covers the National Football League. They've had some press conferences and some question. Say this in German, especially for the New England guys, Edelman or Brady, because Sebastian Vollmer played for Patriots, so he was German, and they forced them to get German sentences, and so we didn't want you to do that.
Yeah,
that's embarrassing. True.
You know, I once interviewed a Miami Marlin, Miguel Cabrera, big baseball player, in Spanish when he was here, using my Spanish. And at the end of the interview, he said to me in Spanish, he goes, "You need to work on your Spanish." So I would have really need to work on my German because I haven't brushed up on that in a long, long time. So I appreciate you guys doing it in English.
You're welcome, but that's okay. So we can do a German lesson once a year. So we're open perfect. For it.
Perfect. Ausgezeichnet.
Perfect. So
wonderful.
Thank you very much. And
yep, thanks for having me.
Und damit sind wir auch schon am Ende des Interviews mit Dave Hyde vom Sun Sentinel angekommen. Ja, ich denke, wir haben super viel Insights bekommen, beziehungsweise so ein paar Hints, was in der Free Agency oder vor dem Start der Free Agency noch so passieren wird und dass Kyle Verneuil nicht der einzige große Name sein wird. Ansonsten denke ich, uns hat es auf jeden Fall super viel Spaß gemacht. Wir hoffen, dass es euch mindestens genauso viel Spaß macht oder beim Zuhören gemacht hat. Wenn ihr lasst uns einfach mal euer Feedback da, wie ihr das Interview fandet, ob wir häufiger mal Gäste aus den USA oder was weiß ich für Ländern einladen sollen. An wem hättet ihr so Interesse? Also ich befürchte, ich weiß, welche Namen kommen, aber lasst einfach mal die Namen da. Und ansonsten bleibt mir in dem Moment jetzt auch nicht mehr viel anderes zu sagen. Ja? Ihr kennt das Spielchen, Support ist kein Mord, habe ich letztens in einem sehr guten Podcast gehört. Und dementsprechend lasst ein Follow da auf allen Kanälen, wo man uns hören kann. Apple Podcast freut sich immer über eine tolle Bewertung von Dolphins Drive. Ja? Die schicken uns dann immer eine nette Mail. Hey, danke, dass ihr dabei seid. Also ja, oder so ähnlich. Na? Ihr kennt das Spielchen. Und vielleicht einfach einen Daumen hoch bei YouTube. Ja? Das tut euch nämlich nicht weh und uns tut's was Gutes. Ja? Durch die Algorithmen. Das Späßchen lasst euch nicht nehmen. Und damit bleibt mir jetzt auch nichts anderes mehr zu sagen als stay tuned and fins up.